I have one for you. Last week, I was at the Hunt Expo in Salt Lake City, which was a great time. Saw lots of friends, old and new, and actually, I ran into this week's guest, which was unexpected and cool. But this week, I am talking to Andrew Arabito of Half Face Blades. And I kind of came to the game late on Half Face Blades. I just found out about them around like Christmas time. But when I first saw them on Instagram, I think somebody shared a story and I saw some pictures of some knives. And I was like, oh, those look too good to be true. Like, they just looked so cool that I was like, those have to be garbage. Like, there's no way someone's making knives that cool that, like, out of real materials and stuff. So I looked at it and it is legit. They are 100% works of art, like just really cool knives. If you're a knife like junkie like me and you really like knives, you gotta check out Half Face Blades. Just incredibly well made, amazing materials, awesome designs, just really cool stuff. I mean, they do drops on Saturdays and their custom work is gone in like 5 minutes. And then they so anyway, I got my first production Half Face Blade recently. Amazing knife. The founder of Half Face Blades, who is my guest today, Andrew Arabito, really cool guy, former U.S. Special, I mean, I'm sorry, U.S. Navy SEAL. He's done work in Hollywood, consulting on films, started a number of successful businesses, and is an all-around well-liked, well-respected, well-known guy in the outdoor and kind of law enforcement, military, whatever, tactical space. Awesome guy, and hope you guys enjoy this week's episode with Andrew Arabito. And we talk about his military past and starting a business and knives. So it's a really cool episode. Hope you guys enjoy it. Yeah, I am home for a while. My next hunt is not until April when I'm heading out to meet up with Joe Edlington of JE Wilds and hunt in New Zealand. So really looking forward to that. But for now, I'm just settling back into dad mode, trying to get back in fighting shape. I'm still in pretty good shape, but trying to, just lose those winter bulking season pounds, if you want to call it that, and get back in shape, get this season going as far as planning, doing a lot of editing, stuff like that. So, hope you guys are looking forward to your next season and using this time to kind of set yourself up for success this fall with your career goals, fitness goals, and whatnot, all that stuff. So, anyway, thanks for y'all's support. Hope you will continue to share the show with friends and family. If you have not done yet, please go over to YouTube and subscribe to the channel and be on the lookout for new content over there, as well as on Instagram at The Hunter's Quest. Happy to answer your questions or chat. I'm usually pretty available on there. And you can join my broadcast channel if you want to kind of get more behind the scenes and just kind of my day-to-day stuff. But anyway, thank you again for your support. Enjoy this conversation with a great American, and we'll see you guys on the next one. So yeah, was that your first trip to Africa, that last one?
Yeah, it was last May.
Okay, cool. You haven't been yet. I'm kind of torn. Like, it looks really cool, but like there's still so much I want to do here that like it's kind of hard to like justify it almost. What was your
I
experience? Do
mean,
you
if you
like
get
it?
the chance, if you get the chance, I absolutely do. You got to think, like, my opinion is North America and Africa have the greatest and different amounts of animals. Like, our animals are so amazing. We grew up seeing them and everything, and we're like, oh cool, like a bison, oh an antelope, like, oh elk, brown bear. Let's get into the like coolest shit we have, brown bear. You go to Africa and it's insane the amount of animals. Like, there's way more animals in here, and the variety is just, I didn't realize, I started hunting, I took my bow and arrow as well as rifle, and I did like a black wildebeest with my bow. And then
Oh, sweet.
they're like, oh, look at those wildebeests. I was like, wow, they look similar to black, but they're bluish in color. Like, that's a blue wildebeest. I was like, oh man, I need to get one of those. So I get one of those, and then I come up the next day, we're hunting like sable or something, and I come up over a ridge, and I'm like, oh my gosh, look at those wildebeests. They're gold. And they're like, oh yeah, that's a golden wildebeest. I'm like, I've got two. I must have to get the third one, right? And then I get the golden wildebeest, and then they're like, "Oh, by the way, there's a royal wildebeest and a king's wildebeest." And I was like, "Oh wow,
Oh,
guys, nice! You're really pulling me." And the same thing with impala. You know, you get
Oh,
impala,
yeah.
saddleback impala, black impala, greater impala. It's a lot. There's just so many amazing animals there.
Yeah.
If you get the chance, I would absolutely do it.
For sure. Yeah, I will do it someday. Just like I've only been, so I live in Virginia and I've only been mountain hunting out west for like 5 years. So it's still like almost kind of
It's
like still
awesome,
new
dude.
to me, you know what I mean? Like
I love it. I mean, I love the mountains. It's the mountains, Alaska. I hunt Alaska a lot.
My
Montana, a
first
little
trip
bit.
ever
Utah,
was to
Colorado.
Alaska, actually.
Wow, you're ruined.
Which I know. Like
That's the
it
most
I literally I
amazing
went
spot on
and,
earth.
yeah, it was actually with my buddy who was a SWCC, and like I was didn't know anything and I was like totally out of shape, and then like I started realizing what we were going to
You
be
should.
doing, and he was like, and I was that like kicked my butt into gear to like get
Yeah.
going, and then literally that trip changed my life, and I've been to
Yeah.
Alaska almost every year since then.
Oh, it's the
So
best place, man. Yeah,
so
same.
cool.
I go up there. I did spring brown last year. Didn't get one. I had one in camp at like 20 feet, a big 9 foot, a little under
Ooh.
9 foot. And it was just like stomping his feet and stood up on me. And I was like, had my 375. I'm like, hey, bear, hey, bear. Like, could have DLP'd it, but like, just that's just a massive fishing game. And I want to, and I don't want to wait 5 years for brown bear. Like, if you shoot one, you got to wait for the fifth year, every fifth year, grizzlies every year.
Yeah.
So I'm looking for a 10 foot plus bear. So I'm going to go back spring 26. But
Wow.
I've been moose hunting up there 3 times, moose and caribou. I don't have a good caribou yet. I mean, there's black bear everywhere. I just, at the end of a hunt, this black bear came through camp, you know, pretty, maybe 100, 200 yards. And I was just like, from hauling the moose out of the, it took 3.5 days to get the moose like almost 2 miles. You know what I
Jeez.
mean? And I was just like so over doing
Hauling
anything.
meat.
So I just yelled at it and ran off. I need a big black bear though still. So that'll
Yeah.
be there.
I only have one caribou, but it's like probably the most epic hunt I ever did. I got these this outfit to take me and a cameraman. We went 70 river miles up this river into the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. They dropped
Yeah.
us off. We killed two bulls and then we floated out on pack rafts. It took
See,
like
that's so
took 2
rad.
days to float out. Like
What'd
two
you go
10
out
hour
there
days.
in? What, they took you up on a speedboat of some
An
sort?
airboat, yeah, like a fan boat.
Yeah, that's
And
pretty
then
rad.
yeah, I mean we saw a muskox, we saw like white wolves chasing giant bulls around. Like it was just like
That's one of the
National
coolest things
Geographic,
ever.
dude.
I'm doing a podcast, buddy. What do you need? I was going to ask if you wanted us to do the grips on the Cab Junior Backcountry and the Beef Backcountry. My understanding is not only is it cataloged, but it's also going to go in the showroom. So should we have every model in the showroom? That's what I'm asking. Yeah, we should probably have every model at least in the showroom if we
Okay.
don't put it on the catalog.
Okay. Well, we'll get all those done.
Okay.
Ben and I are working on the speed. Sorry for interrupting.
All good.
You're good, man.
We got a working shop, man. We bought a warehouse about a mile from here, a month and a half. We're looking for like 5 years to buy our own building. You know, the renting is like you're just paying for somebody else's
Yeah.
life, what they their you know their dreams. So finally found a place. We've just been doing build out. It's just
Wow.
Christmas slowed us down, and everything costs more than the original plan. And
Yeah.
now we're kind of packing up. We got all the CNCs moved over there, and now it's this weekend we'll move everything else and get out of here at this spot. So there's
Yeah,
nothing
man.
behind me.
That's really cool. And you're in California, right?
Yeah, in San
Okay.
Diego.
Well, dude, I appreciate your time. I know you're super busy, so thanks for
All good,
carving
buddy.
out
It
some
was a
time for
comfortable
me, dude.
chat with you.
And I don't normally do this, but I was having my quiet time this morning, and I was actually praying for you,
Thank you.
and I felt like the Lord brought a verse to my head for you, and I want to read it to you.
Okay.
It's not that long. It's Psalm 1, easy to remember. Blessed is the one who does not walk in step with the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the company of mockers, but whose delight is on the law of the Lord, and who meditates on his law day and night. He's like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does prospers. Not so the wicked. They're like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish.
It's a good one. I love that. I appreciate that.
It was the whatever he does prospers part that like popped into my head. Because it seems like you're that kind of guy.
I'm blessed. It's never a me thing. You know what I mean? I have such an incredible team here. It gets hectic. You know, I feel responsible for making sure we have success and we have growth and my guys are growing and we're growing. I want to make sure everybody's taken care of. They have food on the table. I don't want to get rid of guys unless they're total shit bags. Yeah. And I want to create good. You know what I mean? And I want to be honest and straightforward. It gets hectic.
Yeah. You know what
I
mean?
But I go hunting. I'm gone hunting a lot. And my COO, my managers, they're like I can depend on them an extreme amount. And it's mm-hmm. been such a good blessing to have such an amazing team. So maybe I'm good at building a team. You know what I mean?
And when you put good out there, you know, you get good back.
Yeah,
and
you want to, you know, I like to focus on quality, and that's really been a big thing. And I've seen people go out there and, you know, create, you know, a cheap knife and get really popular and make a shit ton of money. And I'm like, I can't do it. Like even my wine label, you know, people go and make $2 chuck and sell it every store and they're making more money than me at that. And I'm just like, I don't know. I just have this weird, I don't know. So I want to make something that's of quality. You know what I mean?
I totally get that. I'm the same way with some of my content.
Less money, I just want quality. Like,
yep.
I'm not going to bend to the almighty dollar. I'd rather grow slowly and make money with my friends and create a really incredible, long-lasting, renowned quality product that people use than make a $25 to $40 knife and put all my money into marketing and be a used car salesman with my knives. I'm never going to do that. Like, never going to do that. I'll grow in which different areas I want to grow, where I want to push product and create good shit for the end user. But like, I'm going to do that. Too many people do that.
I can relate because I'm a content creator. I get basically full time get to hunt and create films, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And like, there's been I've had people tell me before, like, hey, you need to like decrease your production value because it does better on YouTube. But I decided a long time ago, like, I'm going to make films the way I like it. And I'm the same way. Like, I hold it to a very high standard.
Right.
So I think that, and I think eventually you find your audience and you have a better audience and you have other 100%. Quality people that want to be associated with you.
Right. Your value stays high. Your product value stays high. You have people that buy, sell, trade, use, that keep that business in longevity and hold it to a standard. You know what I mean? Man. You have loyal customers. When you sell a cheap knife, someone loses it, they buy another cheap knife. And I always wonder, like, with hunters, I'm like, what? Buy a quality knife, right? Buy a high-end quality knife that you're going to use in all your hunts. It's going to create a fucking value to you that you can get down to your kids. And I'm like, I look at like this hunter and I'm like, oh, wow, look at those $350, $400 pair of boots. Look at all your Sitka gear. Look at that $500 parka.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, look at your, you know, $600 backpack, your $2,000 bow or $5,000 rifle. I was like, and you're buying a $40 knife. Mm-hmm. Like, get out of town. Like, you know, like get a badass custom blade that does the job.
Yep.
And then we can laser engrave your logo on it. You can buy some for your kids. You can hand it down to your kids. That knife can mount with that elk. How they do. Cool. A lot of times the African hunts, they have their, you know, 500 nitro or something. They kill an animal and they mount that thing.
Oh, that's dope.
You know what I mean? Like, it just blows my mind. I'm like, it's going to outlast. You take care of it. It's going to outlast your backpack, your gear, your boots. It's going to outlast all your other stuff. And yet you're going to buy a cheap one because in your mind, you're like, it's okay if I lose it. Like, was it okay if you lose your expensive boots? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's okay if you lose your expensive gun. No, it's not okay. But your gun, it's going to get, there's more technology is going to grow. You might hang it up and get a new one. That knife, just keep it like that's almost the one thing that's going to last generational.
Yeah.
Probably, honestly.
Yeah, for sure.
That is not even your rifle. There's going to be better scopes. There's going to be a better round. You know what I mean? Your kid's going to want to choose something else, but that knife's going to be generational down. And if you're like, oh, you know, if I lose it, it's no big deal because it's a $50 knife. Like, no, like get a better quality, something you really love. Like, if you hunted elk, like send me elk antler. We'll build that, and like we'll upkeep. It's free to upkeep. Like, it's just an interesting aspect I see, and I put that out there sometimes. Like, if you're gonna buy expensive gear, get a fucking nice knife. Invest in a quality knife.
Yeah,
You know what I mean?
for sure. Yeah, so I'm kind of like a knife. I'm not like a knife. I don't like know a ton about knives, but like I love knives and like I know good ones, and I like always use good ones, and I collect them. I got some really cool stuff that like my great uncle and my grandfather have given me over the years and stuff. But for people who are listening who may not know, Andrew started Half Face Blades. And I actually found you guys. I'm kind of late to the game. I found you guys like right before Christmas. I think it was like an Instagram ad, actually, maybe. And
No, I wasn't.
no, okay,
I'm not
maybe
allowed
somebody
to do any
shared. Maybe
advertising. Yeah,
okay, yeah,
probably.
maybe somebody shared something. I think it was on social though. And I saw some of the pictures, and you know, like on Instagram, there's like all these like weird like dudes from like Pakistan making garbage. Like, buy my Damascus blades.
I
It's
know,
not as
it's
bad
like
as it used to be,
Chinese
but.
Damascus or Pakistan Damascus. I know.
Yeah, but like, there's a lot of trash, and like, I cannot stand trash knives.
I just block pages.
Yeah, and so like, but I saw y'all stuff, and I was like, holy crap, that looks awesome. And then I was like, there's no way that it's this good. Like, it's just it looks that cool, but it's not. I started looking, and I was like, dude, this stuff is awesome. So I actually have a ongoing alarm clock on my phone at 3 p.m. every Saturday to check because y'all's
Just to
knives
see what's
literally sell
crazy,
out in like
dude.
5 minutes.
I know. And they could see just so much new, interesting, cool stuff that goes
I
out.
know. Yeah. And
Just
so I got
every
a
week.
production
Yeah, Extrema.
Extremis, which is awesome. Like as soon as I grabbed it, just the balance, the quality. I just love this thing. And a sheath can make or break a fixed blade. The sheath is awesome with the clip. So now I actually carry this thing as like my EDC like in my pocket, which I've never carried a fixed blade in my pocket, which is I love it.
Love that little blade.
Yeah, me too, man. Is this, did you design this blade shape, or is this a,
I
tell me the story behind that.
design all the blade shapes.
Okay.
So a smaller combatives blade that you can carry low vis or on your kit. And what I do is, so you have that little that dip and then a belly. It's like a reverse belly, right? So from the widest point to the spine of that blade, I actually, for guys, I sharpen the spine all the way down too for puncturability if guys want that. You know, the idea is with that little dip right in the beginning of the blade edge is once you stab in and you want to come across, whatever you're cutting doesn't want to just slip off the end of the blade. It wants to get held in there. So whether you're cutting something, it doesn't want to just slide off. So even if you cut and your hand and your the angle is coming down, that little dip is holding whatever you're cutting in it, whether it's cutting through clothing, a seat belt, flesh, whatever it is. When you stab in and you come across, it's going to hold whatever's in there, and that's not going to want to just slide off the end of the blade. It's just going to keep cutting through that upper that
Like
belly,
more increased pressure.
like a karambit, right? That little bit of angle, and it wants to keep the meat in there, keep your clothing, seat belt, whatever.
So every
That's it.
Saturday I get on there because I'm waiting for like the perfect one, you know? Because I don't have tons of money to throw around, but like I'm waiting for like that perfect one that just speaks to me.
Calls your name.
I think I've landed on the Crow Scout Tonto blade. It's
Yeah,
pretty
that's pretty
badass.
badass. That would be that's a limited run, but we'll do another run.
And I love the ones with like the little like seam of turquoise in the handle. Like they just
So
look
like
so
the real
good.
classic, I really love like Western culture, Native American culture. My older brothers really love the outdoors and wilderness survival, and they're making arrowheads and read every, you know, Native American book out there. And we built forts in the yard and made, you know, spindles to start fires, everything you can imagine, you know. And I really
Nice.
loved, done a lot of read books on Lewis and Clark expedition and these people that were moving west, and you know, Empire of the Summer Moon and the Apache Wars are two really incredible books that talked about, you know, the natives and the settlers trying to live out there and battling each other and building their forts and homes and everything. That whole culture, not the war culture specifically, I like that. It's an interesting culture, but just a going into the wilderness and cutting, cutting that the living out of the woods and everything. So I really like that, and that's a lot of our American history on both sides, moving west and exploring. So I really love, wood and elk antler and bone a lot for a lot of stuff, and that's where I really started using majority of that. Now we obviously use all sorts of stuff, but one of the first, I never saw split handles, split material handles before we started them. You know what I mean? There might have been one or two out there of like a bolster and then all wood, but not the way we do them now. Obviously, it runs rampant. Every other person does a very similar thing, but it was cool starting that and just being like in our heads. And then how we did it initially was so different than how we do it now. We build a full scale, then we put it on, line everything up, drill it. Before we would do the top, and then that'd be like pinned and glued on, then the next piece, and it would be off a little bit, and you're like, shit, you have to grind everything off. But that
That's
was like
cool.
the initial one was like wood, turquoise, bone or antler. It was
Okay.
just a little classic American Western native vibe with it,
Because the antler ones seem to sell out really fast.
Antler's really popular. I think if I do some antler, turquoise antler, like onyx antler, they do really well. We'll do some of those.
Yeah, man. Hopefully I'll be on that drop, but yeah, man. That's super cool. Side note, do you know my friend Bill Rapier from AmTac
Yeah.
Blades?
No, Bill.
Yeah,
Yeah.
okay. He
Great, great man.
was like he was a volunteer at my youth group when I was a kid. I grew up in Virginia Beach,
Okay.
and like then we I just like idolized him, and then I end up taking him hunting one time, and we just stayed in touch over the years. So
Yeah,
I just
he's
didn't
in
know.
Idaho, right?
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he's got done, runs his classes up there. He's a hard dude, and he's a good guy.
Yeah, I love that dude. Anyway, man, I want to back up just a little bit.
Yeah.
Dig into your story and stuff, 'cause you got a cool background. Tell me a little bit about your like early professional career, I guess, into the military and stuff like that.
I wanted to be in the SEAL teams since like seventh, eighth grade. And so kind of the end of high school, I had moved to Montana, worked on a ranch, came back, finished up my senior year because I quit my senior year. And then my buddy who I grew up with was wanted to join the SEAL teams as well. And he joined a year before me. I was like, oh, motherfucker. So I'd signed up and I was ready to go. And then 9/11 happened and I was like, he was already in. I was like, I already signed up. I was like, oh, we're going. So I had joined 2002, and went straight through, went to aviation ordnance school. Then you had to go to an A school, like an MOS, before you go to SEAL training. And then at the end of that, everybody else goes to the fleet. I'd show up at SEAL training, knocked it all out one go. Went to SEAL Team 5, deployed. We got disbanded. Our platoon got disbanded. A lot of crazy stories there, but got disbanded. So we formed another platoon. We deployed to Team 7. So when we came back from that, we had a year turnaround, deployed again to Southeast Asia. So Iraq, Southeast Asia, came back from that for a bit. And then from there, went over to SEAL Team 1, hopped into a platoon, SEAL Team 1. It's like me, Brad Kavner, Dan Luna, some really, really good dudes, really amazing platoon. Ryan Bates, Brandon Cruz, really good guys. And then went to Afghanistan, which was, that was 2009-10. And like, we had a fucking incredible time over there. I was like the epitome of, when you're young and you like, there wasn't a lot of Navy SEAL stuff out there. The movie Navy SEALs when I was young, never met one. You know what I mean? I had to do research online in high school to figure out what they do, right? And there just wasn't much. There was that class 234 that came out at some point during my high school. Wasn't much. And so like, and then you hear stories, then the reason you join, right? To go fucking skydive a bunch, to go hunt dudes in bad countries at night, like shoot all the cool guns, get to kill bad people. Like that was the epitome of like Afghanistan for that deployment was really good. Came back from that, went over to MARops, Maritime Operations, ran MARops, which is vessel borne search and seizure, oil platform takeovers, over the beach. For guys, for platoons getting ready to go overseas. So they come through my program. I have a bunch of instructors get that dialed for guys deploying. So did that for a few years and I ended up getting out and up breaking all my fingers.
Oh yeah, I heard that
Yeah.
story.
Just sucked. I could have stayed in. It was just, I don't know, man. It's just it was a bummer, and it was like, well, do you want to stay in and do an LPO slot or chief slot, or you want to get out? You're 10 and a half years. I chose to get out. They give 100% disability, so I got out, which it was, I think one of the reasons I got out too is kind of like there was a big lull. There wasn't a lot going on. It's right before ISIS kicked off. I think ISIS kicked off 2013. There wasn't a lot going on, 12, 11, 12, 13, a little bit. But had ISIS kicked off, I probably would have just been like, oh, hop right back in a platoon. You know what I mean? But who knows? I may not be here now. So there's no regret getting out at, 31 years old or 30 years old and be able to start another life and career.
You got a whole life ahead of you still.
A lot of guys, weren't as blessed as me with the certain deployments I had and work with certain people. A lot of the questions I get is like, oh, do you regret, getting out? And I'm like, I might not be here to have this conversation.
For sure.
No way. You know what I mean? So
Absolutely.
really blessed to, it was like the greatest pride and cool work you ever done, and the greatest heartbreak too, because you lose people you love the most. So
Well, that's what I love about you guys. Like, there's so many movies about like war and stuff where everyone's like, oh, like they're like
thank
freaking
God.
out about going to war and stuff. But like you guys, like that's why you signed up is like to
It's such a
go.
vacation time, dude. You do so much training, and finally you're like, all right, say goodbye to your family, put your bags on the
Let's do
plane and flying over there, and you're just like, vacation. Like, you're just stoked to go to vacation and hunt people,
That's amazing, dude.
Yeah, you're not like, people
Like
aren't
crying about
like
it and
crying. No, it's not like they show Chris Kyle on the roof, like crying, calling his wife. Like, hell no. That never happened. He's probably like, hey, don't wait up. I'm just gonna stay here longer. You know
Or
what I
like
mean?
calling his buddies overseas, like, hey, can I come back?
Yeah, what the hell? Like, you literally have guys that when the platoon comes back, there's guys who are like, can I augment the next SEAL platoon or the next SEAL, platoon coming in? And there's guys who'll just jump ship if that platoon needs like a JTAC or corpsman and just stay for another, 4 or 5, 6 months sometimes. Guys like good dudes in the SEAL teams, like the true frogmen, go to war. Like, that's why they join. There's a bunch of team guys who there are team guys who are absolute pussies, dude. They'll like go to training command, try to go to another training command, come back to a platoon, try to maybe not go to war, like training command. Like, you're just like, what are you doing? Like war dodgers. War dodgers. Like, not a lot of them, but they exist, Your dudes keep trying to go to war because that's the whole point.
Yeah, for sure. That's wild, man. Okay, on that note, I listened to the podcast you with Jack Carr, and like I was just curious, like, 'cause you said you would just go pick fights. Like,
Yeah.
what is that like, what does that look like? What does that mean?
So there's like certain areas, like here's your map. All right, here's our base. Here's the little towns. Oh, up in this valley is all Taliban controlled area, and where they're moving, whether it's money, whether it's drugs, hash, opium, like it's all Taliban controlled in this area. No one goes there. Or we know of like special forces done an off there, big firefight. They left. They were disruption ops, pretty much is what they are. You're like, okay, well, let's go there and pick a fight, right? Let's go do disruption ops is really what it is. So you go up, like we would take our horses and take our kit off, put a bunch of extra ammo, 60 millimeter mortar on our horses, food, some water, and then we'd hike in 7 to 10 clicks up into a Taliban controlled area. We'll do a map study of the buildings, find a building that has some high ground that's a good spot. Stop the horses, put our plates on, go in, clear it, take the family, put them in a room, and then in the morning, put an American flag up.
That's sick.
And just be like, okay,
Come and get
like,
it.
yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. And you're just like, oh, here it comes. And then, like, we're listening to them, a thing that we can hear. We have an interpreter and we can hear their ICOM radios. And like, they'll start chattering and be like, oh, there's the Americans, like, hey, at 2 p.m., you guys get on that hillside, shoot down, we'll shoot RPGs from here. Sometimes they do it, sometimes they don't. We'll see them maneuvering, we can get after them. Sometimes, I've been pinned on the roof for a couple hours, maybe an hour and a half. Other guys got pinned on roofs before, like, smoked some guys, two guys with my 60 millimeter mortar, like on the ridge. guy comes off of the radio like, I'm burning on I'm like, yeah, all right, Willie Pete that guy. It's pretty fun,
That's wild,
you
man.
know, and then you sneak out that night. They don't, you know, at that place then they didn't have night vision.
Yeah.
They're not getting real close to that compound without you seeing or hearing them, and you know, just go up and pick a fight and get out of there. That's when generally you can walk into areas from your base. Other ops of like other bigger ops where you're using like TF-160 that they're flying in, they have a high level mission profile. So it's more like, hey, you know, these guys had a bunch of RPGs and weapons and explosives. They hit them, they took them out, they moved them, it pinged. Here's some information. Last time we saw where they went. Oh, we're going to go to 11,000 feet in the Hindu Kush and hit a compound and find out who has them. See if we can retrieve them. Stuff like that.
Wow.
Or bomb builders, of course. That's like that's the real fun stuff is going after bomb builders, like known bomb builders who they keep them really hidden. They're not the ones. The bomb builders have the knowledge. They're not the ones putting them
Right.
in the out in the street. That's the dangerous job. That's the little peons that do that. So
Yeah.
you know, when you find the bomb builders and high value, you know, target stuff like that.
That's cool, man. Another thing I heard you guys mention on that podcast was like all the cool different like training schools you got to go to and like
Yeah.
some stuff that I was not expecting. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So in the teams, a lot is pretty much like if you find a school that's going to make you a better operator of some sort, you can bring it to the command and they'll pay for it. Like parkour school.
Yeah, that's what I was like,
Yeah.
what?
Yeah, and it was odd, man. It was fun. Like I was real agile and strong, like able to do this stuff. But then, it's kind of like the weird group of guys who just boulder. You know what I
Yeah,
mean? Like, a
yeah.
little bit like CrossFit. I mean, it's like, no, I only work out in my box and wear the tall socks. You know what I mean? Like shut up, and like any gym will work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like the parkour guys are odd, dude. Like
I bet.
they want us to like after training a bunch, like they were like, oh, let's go into town and do it in town. And then they'd be like running across, like people would be eating and there's like a guardrail or whatever. And they'd be like people eating lunch at the restaurant, dude would be sprinting across a guardrail 3 feet from them. And you're like, dude, like you're literally doing this for attention. We could be going over
Yeah.
there. There's no one there. And I
Right.
was just like, all right, you could get a
Did they
little.
like know who you were, or they just thought you were another parkour
They knew we were some guys from the SEAL teams.
guy? Okay. And I wonder if they're like trying to like show off in front of you guys and stuff.
I'm sure. And they have, you know, they had a nice gym to train in, then you go use it on the street. A lot of it was, you know, because we took some gear with us too, some kit, and so it makes it that much harder. And a lot of it was just, okay, like lowering yourself off walls, using walls to get on, you know, higher up.
Yeah.
You know, small takeaways was really a big deal. And
Yeah.
I mean, they were
Any
very
other cool
small
ones?
takeaway.
Any other cool ones you got to do?
I mean, the driving schools were
Yeah.
badass. The first few months in Iraq, we did protection for the seven highest leadership from Lake Zarqawi down. I think we had like one of the
Oh.
vice presidents we did protection for, and I was the lead driver. So like Bondurant, there was a school we went to like two or three times called ITI in Texas. There was one called Tees. It was offensive, defensive driving, and you were doing drive-bys and practicing like steel target drive-bys. And
That's sick.
yeah, like those are cool schools, man.
Cool, man.
Oh, they have O'Neill's rally racing school too. That's up in New Jersey.
Nice. Okay. Last question on that I gleaned from your conversation with Jack Carr was your thoughts on 300 Win Mag versus 300 PRC.
Well, we didn't have a 300 PRC when I was there. So we
Well,
were
just
just.
now as like a hunter, ex-military guy.
I mean, that 300 PRC is a little bigger. I
Yeah.
mean, honestly, that 300 Norma is probably better than the 300 PRC in my opinion. And
What do
it's
you
not
hunt
just
with?
bigger is better. I have my 300 PRC mainly
Okay.
with. That's been the what I've killed the most animals with, that and my obviously bow.
Is it a 1/8 twist?
Probably. I think
Yeah.
so. I could look at my phone. What an
I was
eight.
just because I have a 110 twist and it doesn't stabilize the bigger projectiles. And
Yeah,
I
you
didn't
need
know
a
that at first, and I was like,
yeah.
what is going
That I
on?
have a buddy that shoots 300 Norma and he absolutely loves it. That's a knockdown round too. I have a 338 RBH,
Never even
which
heard of
is
that one.
take a 338 Lapua round and fire form it into another chamber. So you shoot the round, it changes the neck angle, take that shell, fill it up, you know, repackage, reload it.
Yeah.
Pretty gnarly. It's like 3,075 feet per second. It's a 260 grain hammer. I haven't shot anything with it yet. I mean, you
Those
shoot a
hammer bullets are
brown
crazy.
bear at 1,000 yards, and that energy's, I mean, you're still going 1,800 to probably 2,000 feet per second.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
On the long range stuff, are you guys using a lead core or solid copper, or just is it personal preference?
Personal preference. I know some is solid. I have a real good buddy, Chris Harris. He's in Florida, and he's a brain when it comes to ballistics. So he hand loads my hunting rounds, like my 375 H&H, my 300 PRC hand load stuff. Outside that, like my I have a really nice 6.5 Creedmoor. It's like a sniper platform, and it crushes. But I buy like the Federal Gold Match 140 grain, and that shoots amazing. We went up to Hat Creek, into Idaho, last year. That's one of the best courses I've ever been to in my life. I'm gonna go every year.
Nice.
Like, I got Brian Morgan's incredible shooter, incredible instructor. Like, that's a number one place if
Yeah.
anybody ever wants to go to a course that'll get them
Yeah, I know my
very.
buddies at Seekins and like Eberly Stock go
Yeah,
there
yeah,
all the time.
yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. So you can dock is next door.
Okay. Okay,
Yeah,
last question on the military stuff. What's that?
300 PRC is a great
Yeah,
gun.
I just got one. I really like shooting it. But what was your favorite job or like loadout for those days? If you had a favorite.
What do you mean for like going on missions? What do you mean?
Like, yeah. I don't really know that much about what I'm talking about, so I probably not even
I mean,
asking
it
it the right way,
changes
but
mission profile changes. Like Overwatch, obviously, you're taking your rifles out, your sniper rifles. Like I used my buddy Ryan Bates, he was a sniper. I never finished sniper school, but I broke my leg halfway through sniper school, and fine, funny story. But did a bunch of
you can
sniper
tell
ops
it. You
with
want to
Ryan.
tell
No.
it?
I carried the MacMillan TAC-50.
Did
Did a
you
bunch
like doing
of work.
sniper or did you like doing other
No,
stuff?
I mean, honestly, taking down like CQC is, I enjoy CQC better. You
Which
know what I
is,
mean?
what does that mean?
Close quarters combat.
Okay.
Like faking down buildings with bad dudes in it, going up to doors. Weather breaching is pretty fun too.
Cool.
It's all pretty fun.
Yeah, it
Getting
sounds fun.
targets, it's really cool. Like taking down a target, getting some people, getting shot at from some ridges. Your JTAC is calling fast movers in, or a B-2 bomber to drop on a ridge line nearby. And like that's you get it all. Yeah.
Just like living a video game.
Yeah, pretty much. Like you're playing music. You're playing music like before you go out. You know what I mean? I mean, I have like a war playlist, and everybody's getting ready in their rooms. Everybody's like put grenades on. Like make sure their mags are packed. Like all right, like make sure all their batteries are full, and you just walk room to room. Like yes, like oh,
Wow.
I'm so excited.
That's wild, man.
It's
Man, that's
fun.
cool. Okay, so you did a bunch of cool stuff and then transitioning out, I know you crushed your hand in a hatch. I was hearing that story, but your transition out and I haven't heard I've heard a couple of podcasts you did, but I haven't heard you go too deep into hunting, and that's one of the major themes here, obviously. So I guess when did you start hunting? What role did that play? And was that something that you think was helpful to you just as a person coming out of that world into civilian life?
I didn't hunt much growing up. I had a real outdoors family, but they were like, backpacking, camping outdoors, not hunting. We did skin animals. We had a neighbor, Mr. Klebe, who'd like kill every animal that came near his chickens. So we were always skinning raccoons and opossums and foxes, and I think a bear one time. With my older brothers. But I hunted a little bit when I was in with Jason Gardner. We went like Catalina Island. We went out there and did some hunting for the help. They helped like coal the
Yeah.
deer out there. So many. And then when I got out, I have a really amazing buddy, Jeffrey Wobig. Really, really amazing. He was a sniper when he was in and a big time bow hunter, lived in Colorado. So he invited me up. I went up and got my first elk with him.
Cool.
Shot that like it was like a little over 1,000 yards.
Oh,
And the
wow.
Kimber Advanced Tactical 300 Win Mag, actually.
Nice.
Like we're finally going back to the car on this ridge, and like, oh, he's like, when you hunt a lot, He sees animals at 1,000 yards on a ridgeline. I'm like, I don't see anything. Like, okay, it's over there.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, wow, two bulls. Like, he's like looking naked. I'm like, oh, I think there's a couple there. Yep. You know, you after a couple of days of hunting, then you start seeing the
Yeah.
animals. But he's just like, he's a
It's a skill you can develop.
wood 100%, man. And so I got that. That was really cool. And I was like, man, this is a lot of fun. So hunted, I think, one time after that. And I was like, I went and bought a bow, you know what I mean? And started bow hunting and doing bows. And I had another buddy who started a brand called Six Sight. I think they're still around. I think he's since sold it, but really amazing hunter, bow hunter. And I started hunting with him in Colorado, hunting with another guy. And I just kind of every year just progressed in both rifle and bow hunting. And was really blessed to do a lot of bow hunting early on. So I think I have five or six elk, like a bison, some other animals now, obviously African animals with my bow. But I've been, you know, ambassador for Christians in Arms for a few years
Oh, nice.
and their stuff. And that's been cool. This year, I think we're gonna do a trip. Me and Christian Schaff, he's also ambassador for Christian Arms. He owns Uncharted Supply. We're
All
gonna go
right.
down to I think New Zealand and try to do a stag hunt down there.
Nice. Oh, I'm going in April.
Cool. I've been down
Yeah.
there once, the Himalayan tar and
Okay.
I with rifle.
Yeah. Are
Yeah,
you
it was
doing the
cool.
stag with the bow?
No, rifle, because we're going to
Okay.
do it. It's going to be Christians in Arms. Like,
Oh, yeah. Right. Cool.
yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I think Silencer Co. is on board and some other brands. So that'd be cool to
Nice,
do.
man.
That's a cool place, man. A beautiful. New Zealand's just, it's so beautiful, man.
Yeah. I'm going with a local or a buddy who like lives there. He's like, he's a huge YouTuber down there, and so
Yeah.
we're doing like a collab thing, and it'll be cool to go with him because, I mean, there's nothing wrong with like doing guided hunts, but like
Yeah,
I'd rather just hunt with like a buddy, you know? It's just
100%.
so
I
it's gonna be
agree.
cool.
And, you know, if you have no idea the area, then you got to get a guide. But if you have a buddy who lives there, same with like when I hunt with Wobig in Colorado or my other buddies on the north side of the Flat Tops, like they know where the animals are moving. They've done it every year.
Yeah.
So same with hunting with Christian in Utah. Like he lives there, he hunts all the time, so he knows the movement, which is great.
Do you have a favorite hunt? Or species or anything?
I mean elk, yeah, elk,
Archery or rifle?
archery.
Okay, archery
It's
elk
so
guy.
rad. Like, just I mean,
It
I wouldn't say
is.
it's the hardest thing ever. You know what I mean? I've hunted some whitetail that are tougher than that. Wildebeest is supposed to be really tough. Luckily, I just got some defilade and was able to get on this wildebeest. Not that elk country is not hard. Sorry for all the people out there who's four seasons deep and don't have one, but like when they're in rut and they're talking and
Yeah.
shooting a bow and arrow, if you shoot a bunch, it's easy. Shooting a dialed in rifle is easy. That's not like being able to shoot good is not hunting. And a
Yes,
lot
it's
of
true.
people just shoot good and they're going to tack all the time and like they talk about hunting and like, well, then go hunt.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
It's totally different.
go find the animals, know the wind, know the morning and evening, how they climb up, where they rest, where they wallow. Like, know where they go, how they move, hillside, like not breaking the crest, like no traffic of animals morning and evening. Put yourself in the right place, you know, whether you're calling or waiting or what, and or have a buddy, you know, behind you and understand they're going to come this way. They may wrap around to get your scent and try to see you. Like,
Yeah.
no, like the hunting part is the tough part, not the fucking
Absolutely.
shooting part. And a lot of people,
Absolutely.
like, because they're a good shooter, like, yeah, and they've hunted once, and you're like, okay, they like, and
Yeah.
the time off work, not working, your 10 days not working. It costs money, all the fucking hunts, the travel off work, the tags. Like, and then if you get one, like, okay, better learn how to cut it up, better be able to hike it out, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And process it if you do it on your own. It's
Yeah.
a, it's a, it's a, well, things a mission.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, you're right. I mean, shooting, getting good at shooting is, pretty easy to go practice, but like you can't necessarily, like, especially like for me, most of the time I'm going out to Colorado, Montana, Wyoming, places I've never been. I'm picking spots on a map from my home, from my desk and trying to
Yeah.
figure it out, and I've gotten really good at that just 'cause out of
Yeah.
necessity and trying to, like I said, figure it out and then doing it under pressure, like I haven't done
I'm.
archery elk, but this one right here was an open sight muzzleloader. And
Oh,
so it's
that's
not
cool.
quite as tough as archery, I wouldn't say, but it
That's
was like they
cool,
were
man.
still bugling their faces
That's
off.
early season. Like
Yeah.
you
And
get
you got to
early
be
season.
100 yards, like max, at
Yeah,
least for
that's
me.
really cool. I'd like to do that at some point. And that's when they're like in the rut still, right?
Yeah, it was a New Mexico tag. It was my first elk hunt ever, and I drew like a 1% draw, like
You have
premium.
to do it, dude.
Yeah, and so
Did
I
you go
went.
buy a muzzleloader or just buy one?
CVA, they sent me an Acura because I did like
Cool.
a t I teamed up with CVA on that one, like made a film for them. But yeah, it's just a not like a super crazy expense. I'm looking at it right now. I'm doing another open sight mule deer in Utah this year.
That'd be so rad. I want
Yeah.
to do mule deer in Utah at some point. Been invited. I get like
Oh, do you know
it's hard
Trevor
to get
Thompson?
so hectic, huh?
Do you know Trevor
I know
Thompson?
Trevor. Yeah.
He like I did a podcast with him and he was like, "Yeah, come out, I'll help you find some deer and stuff." So,
Yeah, does he live in Utah?
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of decided I'm a mule deer guy. I love elk too, but I just something about mule deer,
Mule
man.
deer are tough, dude. I think that's a
Yeah.
tougher hunt than elk.
Oh yeah, they're way harder to find.
Yeah. And
I
I see a
mean,
bunch of elk and I see like one or two mule deer.
yeah, 'cause elk are just huge. They're like yellow school buses.
Yeah, they're not afraid of much, you know. Mule deer can be afraid of mountain lions. Elk are less afraid. I mean,
Yeah.
they get messed up by them, but
And
white
then
tail, like,
elk are just like, yeah, like I said, when they're vocal, and they're just so much work. When you get one down, it's like so much work. Anyway, man, so I do want to talk a little bit more about business. So, I know a little bit of the Genesis story, but like, yeah, just tell me just about getting going with half face blades and like, and just kind of the story there.
I had like when I got out, I started brewing distillery with a couple of the guys and just didn't do well. And I stepped away and the guys were really dishonest and started stealing money from the brew distillery. And I had used all my injury money. So in the military, you have insurance through Prudential actually. And there's a thing called TSGLI that if you lose each month of work is $100,000. If you're that messed up, you can't work. So I'd been injured a few times, got money through Prudential when I got out. Money to put into this brewery, this other two people, and they stole it all.
Oh my
And
gosh.
like, and I was like, okay, well, I need to work, right? So I was working up in Hollywood. There's some other team guys that worked on movies, so they invited me up. So I was doing a little military advising
Yeah, it's cool. I've heard
there,
about that.
which is great, you know. But I just don't like LA. Like,
Yeah.
working with good people is fine, but LA sucks, and I didn't really want to be in that industry so much. So, I was like, man, what do I do? And I was like, man, I was just thinking back to when I was a kid and making, you know, primitive knives with my older brothers and stuff like that. And I was like, I've been using knives my whole life. I'm now getting hunting more. I've used knives in combat. I love cooking, you know, a shit ton. I have good buddies that are real high-end chefs. And I was like, what if I just start making knives again? This thing, I was like hungover sitting in the bathtub or some shit. And I was like, I start making knives again. And I was like, all right, well, I know the end user. I've always been an end user. I know the shape it needs to be. I know the thickness I'd like it to be. There's so much more I can learn. You know, I've been doing this. There's so much more I can learn making it too. And also, there's a million people out there that make knives. And good on them. There's some very good knives made by knife nerds, but there's not a lot of real end users, right? That make real knives. So there's incredible high quality knives that are guys in their garage hammering out their steel. Really good stuff. Gnarly end users is not a lot.
Yeah.
Especially, there's a few team guys I think that make knives now. I don't know if they have done some of the same things with knives that I have. And I hunt so much as well, right? So I was like, back to the beginning, work on a knife. You know, I was like, all right, what are grinders cost? What's the
Wait,
good
one
grind
random
quality?
question. What type of knife did you carry when you were like active duty, like going into combat?
I carried a few. I carried one that I bought, a custom that I bought, and ended up being just too big. I didn't like it. And then, so I actually carried a crowbar, or excuse me, a K-bar mini, the smaller one for a little while. Obviously, I carry Leatherman, and I carried a folder, whatever issued folder we got. I carried a K-bar mini. I liked it. And then it carried, we had our friend send Rapala fillet knives over that we carried because they were really good. You go through clothing, you know, bigger knives. It's interesting. Like bigger knives will get caught up in clothing. If someone's wearing a jacket or clothing, like, I mean, that wearing clothing will help you in a knife fight, right? But a thin knife, a spike, a thin fillet knife will go right through clothing. You know what I mean? So we started carrying Rapala like fillet knives, just in case we need to use them, knowing that
Interesting.
the capability is greater of going through clothing and right in and out your of a body. So
Wow.
just in case we need to use them.
Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, so I was like, all right, well, I did a lot of research on steel. Started just drawing up really my first knife was just a series one. I didn't have a name for it. It's kind of a camp knife, all around camp knife, and just did 50 of them. The logo was a lion, half lion space, based on one of my dad's paintings. My dad was an artist before he died, and it's a big painting of a lion in my mom's house. And what the lion represents, he's a protector of his tribe, his people, his country. So I did 50 of those. And then I moved to the next design, and the first four designs, like I was like in my mind, I was going to make a different half face design for each new design
Yeah.
knife. And I did like the lion, I did a karambit with half a eagle's face, I did this the disaster with half a Zeus's face, and then I was reading up on Custer and that was wars and the Crow Indians, like he had some Crow Scouts with them, and I was like, oh, I'm going to name these ones a Crow Scout, and the half native face with the two eagle feathers, you know, and then I was like, oh man, how am I going to make so many? I was like, if I continue down this path making new designs, it's going to be right. Since then, I have the Japanese, you know, I forgot the name of those masks that they put on.
Oh,
Those crazy
Kabuki.
masks. Yeah. So I have half of one of those on my Japanese style knives.
Oh,
And my
sweet.
original chef knives is actually, they're out there. I changed it now. Most everything is the, you know, native half face. But some of my original chef knives, it's actually a strong arm. It's just an arm holding a fork is the logo. It's kind
Nice.
of cool. But
Yeah.
I don't know, that just grew, you know, it was me under the awning in my backyard, and I was just grinding them out, making them. And I just had a plastic fold-up table in my house. And the only, I just had social media. I didn't have a website or anything. So the only way to like try to get one would be to like email and request to have one. You know what I mean? And so I just made them and numbered them. I had a piece of, you know, yellow painter's tape with the person's name, the number,
Yeah.
you know, by their name. And that was the beginning. And I realized that when the next design, I was like, dude, I need help. You know what I mean? Demand is there. So the first 3 years, didn't do a website or anything. I hired my roommate, hired my other buddy, built a little shop in my backyard, a little, you know, 15 by 20 foot shop in my backyard here in San Diego, my first house. Built it out, you know, three grinders, there's three of us or four of us. And then I think the neighbors complained that it was too big, the shop, which is
Yeah.
crazy. I guess you can only have 120 square feet in California. Or a detached shop. So I had to rip that down. Then I rented a 900 square foot space. And I realized, like, okay, you know what we can do? We can create a website. We can take orders from people via email, and we can do a website. And everything we make on our, we can make whatever we want as well, because we want to be creative and have fun. Just put it on the website.
Yeah.
Started putting it on the website. And then there was so much demand. People were mad that we only were able to put out that little bit. I'm like, damn. All right. So that's why this whole drop on Saturdays came about, is because we were finishing them. You know, a few Tuesday, a few Wednesday like that.
Right.
And it was only like four or five, 10. And it was like, oh, all these people are just, and I was like, okay, how do we develop this better? So, you know, Monday, Tuesday, we're making badass grips. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we're finishing the knives. Friday, we're getting photos, getting them online, descriptions, pricing. Saturday at noon, you know, if we need to work into Saturday, fine. Saturday at noon, boom, they go live. So that's
Yep.
been, it just came about by demand. And we still do that. We have a, you know, a couple year wait list pretty much at all times.
So
Just
what do you think is there's a lot of knife companies out there, a lot of knife makers. What do you think is like contributing factor to the success?
I think being an end user successful, I can only grow with demand and training and teaching people. I think timing was really good. I think my background kind of solidifies and proves it's, you know, I'm not a guy who just started hunting 3 years ago and now I'm starting out hunting. There's so many of that, dude.
Yeah.
There's guys who don't cook that are making chef knives. There's guys that barely hunt that are doing hunt knives. There's guys who have never been in a fist fight or combat or anything, and they're making tactical blades. And that's just not something I throw my
Right.
trust behind at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think the blade making industry kind of blew up, and I was there before it, which timing is really huge, right?
Yeah, so
I don't really do shows. I don't get involved much like I'd like to do what I want to do, being an end user and focusing on really good quality stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, from production, like my focus this year with this new shop, I'm going to grow the production side. I want to be able to give retailers our production line of really good high-end quality production knives.
Yeah.
And we'll continue growing the custom side as well. And collaborations are awesome. I love doing collaborations with gun companies. I don't like if it's a really cool company that values their work and quality people, then it's really fun to do collaborations. It just opens up that market.
For sure. And yeah, I mean, I could tell, like, when we were talking about stuff earlier, like, your face kind of lights up, like, you're passionate about it. And I feel like, you know, doing things that are hard, you know, saturated, very, you know, competitive, you have to have, like, that, like you said, experience, like, know what you're doing and have done it before and, like, love it to the point where, like you said, you were happy just, like, grinding out 50 knives by yourself in your backyard. With no promise of a successful company,
Correct.
and that's contributed to, you know, like, just hard work and just loving what you do and knowing how to do it well.
That's a recipe, I think. You know, there's guys who are knife nerds and like, oh, look at that person's successful. I'll copy them and make knives. I have plenty of people that copy our products. Well, it's a knockoff, right? And then they don't have the pedigree, the background to really understand the designs.
Right.
They don't use them,
Yeah.
right? So the recipe is, you know, obviously hard work. The great recipe is like end user, hard work, focus on quality, and use your products. That's a great recipe,
Yeah,
you know,
for
for
sure.
success. And obviously being creative in that process where you're not copying everybody else's knives.
Absolutely.
It's a big no-no, and it happens all the time.
One like really quick question and then one bigger question and then we're done. What do you think of Magna Cut?
It's better now than it was. I think it's great. My only issue with it is that to get the edge retention, the corrosion resistance, you have to heat treat it to like minimum 62. A lot of times it's 63 Rockwell. So therefore, you're going to have an edge that chips with more brittle edge. So it's a good steel. The problems we were running into originally when I put out like, hey, we were having problems with Magna Cut, it wasn't really an end user that much. There was a lot of chipping happening compared to S45, that we can do at 60 Rockwell or 3V around there. The problems were there was a lot of stress for some reason, the steel when it gets rolled. So it was during heat treat, it would bend more than any other steel. And the straightening process for the guys who are heat treating is just a bitch. Right. We were having problems in-house just when we're water jetting some of them bending, which there's that means there's so much tension in that steel for some reason. You know, and I don't know, I'm not a metallurgist, but there was a lot of tension. And then we'd get it to heat treat. They were having a lot of problems with it bending. The problems I was having with it weren't like the end user knife was 99% good to go. The only things I was
Gotcha.
seeing when we were testing it against 3V or S45 is the edge is going to chip over getting a little ding in it because of the brittleness of the steel. But the corrosion resistance is good. I mean,
Edge retention pretty
for
good.
all around, like S45 is pretty hard to beat for a very all around
Is that what you guys use
M390.
mainly?
Yeah, S45. M390 is really good for a bowler steel, like a non-American steel. There's some good steel, like S60V, S90V. We've been doing some sprint runs of those. Really good. I mean, some good steel as well. There's M4. So we are, sorry, 3V. There's 4V. There is an M4. 3V, I use a lot. 4V is really good. There's a couple things that I think 3V is better for. And that's why I use, like, you know, we can jump and do S90V, which is really good steel. It's a lot more expensive, but there's a couple things. If you want a very high-end steel that's all around very good, I like to use that. You know what I mean? I think
Nice.
for Tomahawks 3, like S45 is way too much because you're hitting with it. So I switched over to 3V for my Tomahawks. I'm in the process of and then lowering the Rockwell a little bit so you don't chip an edge. I'd rather get a little dent in the edge than chip an edge.
Yeah, for
That's
sure.
why you see, you know, like shun knives. You see people have shuns and they're a nice kitchen knife. It's such an incredibly thin blade. It's amazing cutting, but you nick it on the edge of your granite counter, it's getting a chip in it. And then you have to grind from the highest level of that chip the whole blade up
All the
again.
way up.
So you don't want a chippy edge, you know. Making the cut's good. I think it's gotten better with that tension and everything in the steel. We may move over to it. It's not a huge price difference. You just don't want to jump on anything you got to hack with, which kind of
Okay,
sucks. So, I
cool.
mean, great for skinning, but then if you're getting in there between the joints and the chip your edge, that really sucks.
Yeah, that does suck. So yeah, I was listening to another podcast you were doing, and you were talking about, you were saying, if you want to do something different, be a leader of the pack, be an entrepreneur, do something crazy, like start a successful knife company or join the Navy SEALs, or like for me, like start a hunting TV show. And like everyone's
Yes.
telling you, you can't do that. Like that's too cool. Like you can't do that. You like in order to do different stuff, you have to live differently
Living
and
differently.
like be different. And I
People
was,
recognize that you're living differently.
yeah. And I was literally thinking about this morning because like my kids are out of school today, and so I knew I wouldn't anyway. Like I needed, if I was gonna go to the gym, I had to go at 6 a.m. or I wasn't gonna go at all. And I
Yeah.
like was laying there, I was like, nah, I'll just go like another. And then I literally heard your voice, and I was like, damn it, Arabito. Okay, and I got up and went to
Kind of,
the
it's kind of true. Like when everybody else would stay in bed, like who's the guy at the fucking gym? You know what I mean? Like, and people will recognize that over time. And
But my
then later
question
on in
was.
life, when you're successful and they're doing the same thing, they're like, "I work hard. I work just as hard as you." And you're like, "But there's a difference. You know,
Well, I
when
wanted to
you're
ask,
drinking
like,
on a weekend."
for you, practically, like, not from like a high level, like, actually, you, Andrew Arabito, like, what are some things that you do in your life different you think that have contributed to you, being a successful person?
I mean, I think choosing to join the teams and the demand that it even talks about online or in books of what it's going to take, you know, that level of discipline. I can be disciplined in some areas. I lack discipline in some other areas. I know where I'm lacking and what to work on. I think choosing to join the teams at that young age put me in a position where it's like, I didn't think about quitting at all. A lot of my buddies never thought there was like, you either pass or fail. But don't quit. You know what I mean? And that was a big, I think, aspect of just work, you know, like work ethic over time. You know, it takes a bit to become a leader because I think leaders, I don't think leaders are born. I think leaders are made over time and what's happened in their lives personally, and then who they work with and who their leaders are, you know, and then when you become a leader, working through those issues on your own with teaching others, you know what I mean? You become a leader being one, a better leader, ideally, or you people don't trust you and you food. But I obviously, you know, I spoke about I've been really blessed to have good friends in the military in my time in and also out. And I've been blessed to stay really close friends with some of my SEAL buddies that are out now and some of my civilian buddies. I had a couple of buddies live with me while I was in the military. And then when I got out for like 10 years, roommates, you know what I mean? I love that. I like having roommates and they're just good guys. They both work here. We both run parts of the business. One of my good buddies I've known since like ninth grade. He's one of my managers.
That's
I've
cool.
been blessed to have surround myself with some really good people that have, you know, helped me through my ups and downs. And the responsibility to be successful, to provide for them and their families is really huge. And that leads to a lot of the thought process of our work ethic and getting shit done and trying to be successful.
Cool,
Take
man.
care.
Well, yeah, let people know, I guess, if they aren't familiar, where they can find your stuff, and then just real quick, what's occupying most of your brain right now? What are you looking forward to, excited to, working on?
So the things I have going on is Half Face Blades, which is just Half Face Blades Instagram. There's a bunch of fake ones out there. It's like 10 fake ones or more. You'll find the right one if you spell Half Face Blades right. And then halffaceblades.com. Warpaw Wines. It's warpaw.com or Warpaw Wines is the Instagram. Canoe Club, Ammo Company. I have, you know, I work with a bunch of really good people with other businesses. Light Helmets is a really cool helmet company. I work with them. Uncharted Supply with Christian. Protect Products, really good guys.
Oh,
Tim,
you work with them?
yeah, Tim,
Nice.
really good people. Obviously, Christian Arms, I work with them. A lot of amazing gun companies. I'm really close with Navesky and a lot of these gun companies out there. Things that are occupying right now, it's what's occupying my mind is getting my other building built out, getting moved over there successfully, getting everybody up and running, and you know, kicking everyone's ass into gear, being organized and focused this year so we can grow this year and provide really great tools for everybody else.
Awesome, man. Well, keep crushing it, dude. You're an inspiration, and I really enjoyed talking to you. And guys, set your alarm for 12 PST if you want to get a sweet knife.
Yeah,
Otherwise, if it's
happy
12:05,
Saturday,
you might
12 p.m.
not.
Pacific time.
Yeah. But they
Awesome,
make you
it's a
guys have some
pleasure.
really good production stuff too, so
Yeah, well, we'll always have both on the side, you know.
yeah. Cool, man. Well, great talking to you, dude. I appreciate you carving out an hour for me, man.
Absolutely, brother. Anytime. We'll chat later. I have some trips coming up, and if you still do trips and videography and make cool videos, we should chat.
Oh yeah, dude. I go on 6 or 7 hunts a year, mainly in the American West, but like, you know, I did Spain with Pedro and Puero this last year, doing New Zealand. So I mean, this is my full time gig, and I ain't stopping till I'm on
Awesome.
top.
Well, let's chat because I got some cool stuff coming up. So
Okay, yeah,
awesome,
we'll
brother.
talk off air real quick.
Cool.
Thanks, brother.
Good idea.